Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Your Money Your Life podcast, episode 184 of the podcast. Before we get into it, make sure you like, subscribe, 5-star rate and review wherever you're listening. And also if you're watching on YouTube, hit the notification link and subscribe so you know every time we drop a new episode. We'll get right into it this week. There is a lot to talk about. I'm going to touch on the market first and foremost. So I'm looking at it right now. We have a strong day today, and I'll go into why we have a strong day today. If you look at the past week, the market had been trending a little bit lower over the past week for earnings, different things, the downgrade of US debt. And today, at least as of right now, this could sell off later in the day. We've seen that happen. So I'm not banking on this staying there. But new inflation numbers came out. New inflation headline CPI was 3.2% from a year ago in July, slightly below expectations. And the core CPI came in at a 12-month rate of 4.7%. So below the estimate. These were both slightly below the estimates that their economists had projected. So what this means is the trend of inflation slowing down is still going, right? So if you see this goes back to 2020, 2021, when we saw crazy inflation, and we are now dropping on the core and the headline number fairly right. What came in higher was shelter. So you're seeing rents still be a little bit higher. Shelter costs rose 0.4%, and we're up 7.7% from a year ago. Food also still coming a little bit higher. So when you see deflation in those areas, which we're getting closer to deflation in food and shelter, used vehicles are declining. So we're seeing that, and that's the big thing you want to see is those two areas finally come down, because those ones are still the ones that have been sticky and been sticking with us there. But all in all, the market seems to have liked what they're seeing so far, because huge jump in pre-market trading and also in the first couple hours of trading so far. Again, I don't know that sticks throughout the rest of the day. We've seen that sell-off happen around midday in some areas. And there's been a big report of inflation because it's been so strong. The consumers are being stretched. The total credit card debt passed $1 trillion for the first time this year, according to New York Fed data. So the first time consumer credit card debt, meaning everyone domestically credit card debt, passed $1 trillion. So some people are now thinking that we can avoid a recession if we can keep seeing the inflation dip without the government, without the Fed slowing down the US too much. So that's the big market update that we're seeing right now. Again, we'll see how it trades the rest of the day, but the big thing is inflation data that came out that is pretty telling. So that's the big thing on the inflation so far. Let's dive into a lot of news, so much news. I'm going to go into each one and try to hit everything if we can. So this is the first story. Of course, we talked about the inflation data already. It was holding steady in July. And actually, you know, we talked about this already. So we'll skip that one. Let's go to a story about Netflix. We talk about like streaming a lot, it seems like, but the power of Netflix. So Suits, which is a show that was like, I think it's like a decade old. I don't know how old it was. I watched a couple of seasons. It's okay. My fiance really loves it. But they were placed on Netflix. They had a deal, a license deal, or whatever it is. Now they're on Netflix. And this is a series that, again, was good when it was on, but it was kind of forgotten. And now that it's popped up on Netflix, everyone's watching it. It is dominating the viewing charts. It's getting, you know, a lot of views. It's logged more than 3 billion minutes streamed per Nielsen in the past 4 weeks, a record for a Netflix licensed show. So again, logged more than 3 billion minutes streamed per Nielsen in the past 4 weeks, which is a record for a Netflix licensed show. And they do this often. You was another show that had been actually canceled after one or two seasons. Netflix licensed it, brought it on, and it became a huge, huge hit. So again, they brought this back, which again, it's huge. I just thought it was interesting that you see a show didn't get when it's episodic and it comes out once a week or whatever, once every, you know, week, that doesn't hold people as much as if you can play a whole season in a whole sitting and really see the story play out pretty quickly. I think that really hooks people. And that's why it made Netflix such a great big company, because of the way that they did that differently. That's like the biggest innovation I think that they did is, hey, we're going to do subscribers. We're going to stream it. You can see it all at once or however you want to consume this content, which a lot of people really, really like. So that's another reason why I think a lot of these series they're able to bring back to life, which is pretty, pretty incredible. This is an interesting story. So UPS, the union, the workers, drivers, they were going to go on strike. I think they did went on strike, or maybe it was briefly or momentarily, but they reached a deal and there were some eyebrows raised at the deal they reached. So UPS CEO said drivers will average $170,000 in pay and benefits such as healthcare and pension at the end of a 5-year contract. But the delivery driver stuck with the Teamsters union last month, averting a strike. So they did avert the strike. And this tentative agreement covers 340,000 workers at the package carrier. They're in the middle of a ratification vote that begins Thursday and ends August 22nd. So people were talking about it because of the striking number in some cases at the end of the 5 years. So it's a contract that goes 5 years. So at the end of the 5 years, full-time drivers will receive up to $170,000 in pay and benefits. So that's maybe their base is like $120,000 or whatever. And then they get 401k match and healthcare and all that will team up to $170,000 or something a year for these folks. And so there was some people that raised their eyebrow at this, whether it's people in tech or engineering or, doctors, lawyers that made under that were okay, so now like UPS drivers, which again, they may look at it as a different skilled job or a blue collar job, that are making potentially more than people that have like went to 2 or 3 years of school for that. So yeah, a lot of people raise their eyebrows that I didn't. I think, it's really, for someone that makes more than that, it's way more than that. It's interesting to see that what wages and inflation has done to the market, right? Like they're you have to raise wages. Wages have raised a lot over the last couple of years. They'll probably stay steady now for a foreseeable future, just because employers paying people is their biggest expense for operating the business, and they've seen that increase so much, cut into margins, and now it's really going to stay steady, I think. But this is a big win for those folks. And again, it's not everyone will make that. I think the average UPS driver now will make $100,000, or the average pay for their employees $100,000. But some of the people that are full-time drivers and not packagers or any of those other things that stick out to what needs to be a full-time driver at the end of this period, which will be in 2028, that's what they'll be pulling in at that point. So quite interesting. A lot of people raise their eyebrows at it. I thought this was an interesting story. Minneapolis takes on inflation. I didn't even know what this meant, but I wanted to read it because I'm from Minneapolis. So the Twin Cities is now the only major U.S. metropolitan area to bring inflation below the Fed target of 2%. Oh, that's interesting. Thanks to an aggressive push to make housing affordable. In 2019, Minnesota killed zoning that allowed only single family homes. And since 2018, it's invested over $300 million in rental assistance and subsidies. Those changes enable an explosion of new buildings and condos and apartments. As of May, shelter prices in the city were about half of the nation's annual pace. Now Minneapolis residents spend about 40% of their income on housing, while in comparison to metro areas like Boston and Chicago, that number is closer to 60%. So interesting enough, we're just talking about inflation and what it does. Obviously what it does for individuals. So inflation and what's been doing for the CPI, the headline inflation number. And now Minneapolis, if you break it down by state or by city, Minneapolis has done something where they kind of changed zoning laws to allow more condos and apartments, which creates more supply, which allows for the supply to meet the demand and lower the amount, the cost for people to get into these apartments or condos or buildings, which thus lowers the inflation rate on a shelter. So they're doing a pretty good job there for a city, for my hometown, to be able to lower housing affordability or make housing more affordable. And thus, bringing inflation a little bit tamer in Minneapolis. That's pretty interesting. We'll keep an eye on that and see if other people can do it. Because if you can meet increased supply, of course, it'll make it a better situation and make it more affordable. So the strikes, we've talked about this. I don't know if you saw this. There's the writer strikes, which have happened. And now we're seeing the actor and writer strikes, and it's affecting Hollywood. There was a popular icon and influencer and actor, I think Billy Porter, who said he had to sell his house because of these strikes. He was slated to be on two projects starting in the fall. Of course, as it looks right now, there's been 2, 3 months of strikes in Hollywood. That doesn't look to be happening. And so strike is beginning to hurt Sony's profits. Sony, of course, is a big company that does a lot when it comes to media, studios, movies, gaming. And they said that their financial impact is beginning to emerge. And they saw a 6% slide in revenue and 68% decline in profits in its movie division. So that's pretty steep. 6% decline in revenue, 68% decline in profits. That they pointed to the strike as for their disappointing performance. They said the strike is the reason why they're disappointing in performance. So the studios they're gonna have to start paying. Someone's gonna crack. It's either gonna be the studios or it's gonna be the writers, actors, the unions. But someone's gonna crack. They said the executives of the studios were saying they were just gonna bleed them out until these people couldn't afford their houses and apartments anymore, which is of course horribly wrong. But this one looks like it's gonna be continue to go. This is a very, very contentious strike battle. And yeah, this is going to keep going. Sony reported a 31% drop in quarterly profits, but is it as bad as it sounds? Yeah, it's looking tough for those folks, and we'll have to keep an eye on this. Michael Kors' parent sold for 8.5 B. So Tapestry, the owner of Coach, is buying Capri Holdings, the parent company of Michael Kors and Versace, for $57 a share, or about $8.5 billion, the company said. So Coach is the owner of Coach is buying the owner of Michael Kors and Versace. Interesting deal. I like to look at these deals and what's going on in retail. It's a huge push during to become competitive with the fashion powerhouse LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, and Gucci owner Kering. So Capri's market value is around $4 billion, a fifth of the 2014 peak, and Tapestry is currently worth about $10 billion. So Tapestry swallowing up Capri to be able to compete with LVMH and the Gucci owner, Gucci parent company as well. So you're seeing a lot of consolidation in this industry. Of course, you have to consolidate because again, these brands, it's so interesting. The hot, not trends. I'm not the fashion guy. I could tell you, can't tell you what. It's hot or not. So that is interesting enough to watch. And we'll keep our eyes on that. So the big deal that we're going to talk about in more depth is Barstool Sports founder Dave Portnoy buying back his company for $1, which is everyone's praising him online for such an amazing transaction. Let's actually dive into what happened specifically. So essentially, we'll go through all the back context. The back context is in 2020, Penn purchased a significant portion of Barstool Sports. They took a 36% stake for $163 million back in 2019. Actually, they announced it, I think, in 2020. Early this year, the company spent another $388 million to buy the remaining interest of Barstool, right? So they did 36% based on some hurdles and metrics, I'm assuming that they were looking at. They had the option to execute to buy the remaining interest, and they did that earlier this year. And then they said in a filing Wednesday that they're giving Barstool back. They're giving them back of the rights to Barstool. They're writing down $850 million on the investment. So they lost $850 million to buy this company and now release it back to Dave Portnoy. And he bought it back for $1. And people were like, why, how did he do that? Why would they do that? Why would they buy it or give it back to him for $1? But Penn, which is a gambling and sports company, a gaming company, Penn Entertainment, it's a casino owner, gambling, and different and the likes. They wanted to buy Barstool in the first place because they thought it'd be a great marketing tool and they could use their sports book and grow their gambling business and their entertainment and casino business. Didn't really do that well. The Barstool One is not great at regulators don't like the company because of some of the things they say, of course, and I where we all agree with that, of course. And you know, they had issues with the regulatory front. They just weren't getting a lot of betting interest as they assumed. And so now they had an opportunity. ESPN taps them and says, hey, you can partner with us and be our official sports book for ESPN. And of course, Penn doesn't want to lose that deal. But ESPN pretty much said, you have to get rid of Barstool for us to do this. Famously, if you remember, years back, Barstool and ESPN had a deal for a show that got cut after one episode because some things came out about some of the Barstool hosts said about some ESPN employees. So ESPN pretty much said, you have to get rid of them or else we won't do the deal. So Penn was at the barrel. They had to give Barstool back to Dave Portnoy for one, pretty much $1. In the regulatory filings, it's $1 transaction. You have to have some transaction. That's why the $1 monetary amount is what it was. There is a non-compete and other agreements. The other agreements are that if Barstool were to be sold again, Penn would get 50% of the sale price, the valuation, and that maybe they get some dividends as well. But that's the whole play here. So they had to cut ties with him. And then they announce that they're doing the deal with ESPN. I think it's roughly $1.5 billion that they're going to pay ESPN to be the official sports book for ESPN. They're trying to catch up with DraftKings and FanDuel, who control 70% of the sports betting market. So that's what's going on right now. It's really, really interesting. It was a big deal all over. Everyone's talking about it because it was a wonderful deal for the person that won in this deal is, of course, Dave Portnoy getting back his company for $1. And then, of course, if he sells, he had to give them 50%, but they owned 100% before. So he really, really, really won in that deal. And because of that, we're going to talk about how he got rich segment. And we're going to talk more into, you know, what he's done to do his story and to gain wealth. We'll talk about that. PayPal is launching a stablecoin straight into crypto's muddy water. So PayPal is doubling down on crypto. The Venmo owner said it's launching a stablecoin that'll be available to U.S. customers through PayPal. The payments biz said it hopes to build a link between digital currencies and the OG payments used by merchants and shoppers. We'll see how much buzz it gets. I doubt it gets any buzz at this current time just because of what's going on. But when things get crazy again, I'm sure people will start jumping on it. So let's go into our case study, folks. Again, not a big fan of the person himself, but I think it's interesting to talk about how Dave Portnoy started Barstool and was able to bring that to obviously bring him pretty wealthy. So started in 2003, and it was a newspaper at first, just writing sports in a funny way. It was a newspaper. It was a blog before a blog. He would literally drop these new papers around Boston. And that's how it really, really started. So again, it was like a sports newspaper breaking down in a funny way, breaking down sports. He quit a job that he hated and started Bar. So they started doing parties at universities and gaining a lot of traction that way. And then they launched a website in 2007. So it was really just not online. It wasn't online till 2007. So 2003, it was newspaper and parties. And then they launched the website, which was when, of course, blogging was in infancy in 2007. Really took off there, and it became a huge, huge blog, and they did parties, and they grew the business. And of course, what is it actually? If you're a blog or a newspaper, or any of those things, what are you selling? You're getting consumer content, you're giving consumers content, but then you're getting advertising. Your sales are from advertisers that want to be embedded in your blog. They want to be embedded in your newspaper. So that he's starting to, you know, get money from doing that, from advertisers knocking at his door to be able to advertise through his mediums. In 2016, he sold the majority stake. So they blew up, of course, and then in 2016, they're huge, at least becoming huge. But he sold the majority stake to the Chernin Group, which was a private equity firm, a venture fund, private equity firm. And he even said famously he got hosed on that deal because he sold 51% of the company, which was the controlling stake. So he no longer had control of the company. But he sold it at a $50 million valuation. So he literally just got, what, break my math for me, like what, $7 million check for a company that was worth way more than that. And he knew it, they knew it, but he didn't know, he didn't hire an investment banker, he didn't hire anyone to help him value his company. And so he sold it just sold 51% for $7 million. He got $7 million for that, right? So they did it. That's a smart investment on their part. They did a smart investment because they gave him a $7 million check. They own most of the company. He's still working, grinding, building it up. And then in 2020, they sell more of Barstool. And this time, 4 years difference, they get $450 million for, I think the valuation was $450 million. It was a $450 million valuation in 4 year time frame. That's obviously tells you that he definitely was undervalued in his 2016 sale, because in a four year time frame, the valuation jumps to $450 million. And of course, depending on what he owned, he gets $100 million check this time. So he gets a huge, huge check this time for the sale of Barstool. Again, that was the Penn deal. So he sold to Penn. They brought 36% controlling interest. It was some cash, some stock. He famously says that he has a lot of Penn gaming stock because they did some of the transaction in cash, some of it in stock. Penn is obviously a publicly traded company. And so we'll break down the transaction here. Penn Gaming entered in January 22, acquiring 36% stake from the founders for $163 million. So that's 36% for $163 million. That comes to the $450 valuation. The investment granted Penn Gaming an option to acquire the entire company, accumulating in the transformative transaction of August 2022. Penn Gaming exercised the option to purchase Barstool outright for a valuation of $390 million. So Penn invested at this point a total of $550 million to acquire Barstool in its entirety. So they sold it off. The Chernin Group, they're the big winners. They bought this company at a $15 million valuation and then exited completely at a $400 million valuation. So they really, really, they come out on top of this. So does he, of course, getting hundreds of millions of dollars. But they just made a really smart investment. So that's what happened. And now, of course, he's now got the company back for $1. And a lot of people are talking about the deal being a crazy deal. It's a crazy deal for him, a big win for him, of course. So that was an interesting, interesting story. And you could see behind the scenes of what ownership does, equity does, building something up, being able to sell it to someone that wants the cash flow, and still being able to continue to build it and then later sell to someone else, right? That's real business behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about. I also wanted to do a roundtable. This is a really long episode today because I wanted to do a roundtable to discuss more and more of what I'm seeing online about, sales and courses. And maybe we'll talk about it next week because it's a deep dive and it needs its own segment. It truly, truly needs its own segment about people scamming, sales, courses. I'll just leave people with this and you can tune in next week. If you have to buy something, and it's not a bad thing to learn, but there's so much free resource online. But if you have to buy something that says it can teach you how to run a business, come on. Why isn't like someone like really big, great business owners like Mark Cuban or any of those people or Warren Buffett selling courses on how to run a business, right? Like someone can't run a business for you or give you the keys. You have to really learn by experience. But we'll talk about that more next week. It's something that really needs to be dove into in its own topic, its own way. But I'm seeing so much about that. You're probably seeing it more online, whether it's someone teaching you that can trade or auto trading bots or they can teach you how to run a business. You've got to learn it by experience. Imagine this. If someone had the tools to, let's think of this hypothetical situation. If someone had a cave where there was gold and silver and they could just go to it every day and grab gold and silver and come back out, why would they then say, okay, I'm going to tell everyone else about how to do this so that they can also take the gold and silver? That's exactly what I'm talking about, these online gurus where it's like selling a course or a trading thing. That's not real, folks. It's not real. It's sad to see people that may not have the best, they have to be ignorant to like what's going on, best understanding, to see them be tricked by that time and time again. But it will always happen. I've talked about most people, but these people are also complicit because it's a lot of work that takes into account to doing something great, right? And most people don't want to do that, right? That's why diet pills are popular. That's why a lot of things are popular that gives a shortcut, because people would rather do that than if you explain how much work goes into something. They don't want to do that. So, well, maybe we'll talk about it next week, but I wanted to just foreshadow But hey, this has been a long episode with a lot of information. Hope you enjoy. We'll talk next week.